Srila Prabhupada ki, Sri Bhaktivedanta ki, Grantha Raja Shrima Bhagavatam ki, Giriraj Maharaja ki, Gopremanande. Okay, so tonight we'll begin the overview, chapters 41 to 46, six chapters. And then next Tuesday we'll have the closed book exam. Here in the theater, starting at 7. Next Monday, we'll do the finish chapter 46. Okay. So I'll speak, and then if there's anything you'd like to add as we go, then please add. So what is chapter 41 called? Krishna and Balaram enter Mathura. In the beginning of the chapter, we see Krishna is at Akrura Ghat. Where is Akrura Ghat? In between Vrindavan and Mathura. This is the border, the edge. So if you do parikram around Vrindavan, then as you're going up the backside, and then there's the sharp right back towards Vrindavan. And there's a road that continues off towards Mathura. Then at that place, that's where Akrura Ghat is. So at this place, Akrura stops the chariot. And when he stops the chariot, then Krishna and Balaram take bath. And then Akrura, he goes into the water, and he sees, when he goes underwater, he sees Mahavishnu and Ananta Sesh, and he looks back at the chariot and he sees that Krishna and Balaram are still sitting on the chariot. He looks back in the water, so then he sees this dual situation. So then Akrura, he goes back to the chariot and he looks very bewildered. So Krishna and Balaram say to him, did you see something astonishing? Was there something extraordinary? And then Akrura says, then you are the supreme personalities of Godhead, so therefore anything that you do obviously is extraordinary. So then there's reason for me to be astonished. So the basic premise at this point is that Krishna never leaves Vrindavan. What takes place at this point is that Krishna's expansion goes out of Vrindavan, who is known as Vasudeva Krishna. The original Krishna does not leave at this point. So Prabhupada gives different explanations of what happens. The original Krishna, he stays in Vrindavan. Prabhupada says one explanation, he goes into the hearts of the Brijbasis. So he's there, but he's uppercut, he's unmanifested. Another explanation is that Prabhupada said he hides behind a tree, which means also he's there, but it's uppercut. You cannot see him anymore. There's different explanations. So in one sense, he never leaves. In another sense, he leaves. It's an expansion that leaves. So at this point in time, Akrura is overcome by awe and reverence. Akrura is in Dashabhav. Dashabhav means he's in the mood of servitorship. So he's in a different mood. So the prayers that Akrura offers to Krishna and Balaram speak about their godhood, about their supreme personality. It is not it is not the same prayers that the gopis, for example, offer to Krishna. Because the prayers the gopis offer a free from awe and reverence, whereas the prayers of Akrura, based on Dashiras, they're very much mixed with awe and reverence, or understanding of Krishna's Aishwarya, or his supremacy. So then, Krishna and Balaram begin to travel towards Mathura. And as they travel to Mathura, then many villagers see them on the way. And the villagers become completely enamored by them, because they are all attractive. They find them overwhelmingly attractive. So that is the nature of Krishna. Wherever he goes, he will attract everyone. And we see that all through the next few chapters. When he enters Mathura, everyone in Mathura is attracted to him. In Vrindavan, we heard descriptions how even the forest animals, even the creepers, the plants, they are attracted to Krishna. So that is his supreme, all-attractive personality. Now, when finally they catch up to Nanda Maharaj, Akrura comes and he meets Nanda Maharaj. Nanda Maharaj has gone ahead and he has arrived there before Akrura and Krishna and Balaram. So when they come, he set up a camp outside of the city. So Krishna arrives at the camp. And at this point in time, we have to remember that Krishna left Vrindavan only a few hours before. And in the previous section, we heard the description of how much intense separation there was when Krishna left Vrindavan. Right? And how much the gopis, you remember, they beat Akrura. You remember, this is only earlier in the day, the same day, earlier. And Krishna himself fainted. Right? And Balaram had to catch him and support him. And he was taken out of Vrindavan in the most intense state of separation. And the gopis were having the most intense revealing their hearts and their innermost desires and their the most intense feelings of separation towards Krishna. Yeah? So this was extremely powerful. You can come over. Go. So that was extremely powerful. So now Krishna has arrived. All of this is still fresh in his mind. Right? Krishna is still fully absorbed in the pastimes that took place when he left the residence of Vrindavan. So he gets there with Nanda Maharaj, but he's absorbed in extreme separation. Krishna is feeling intense separation. He knows how much Srimati Radharani and the gopis are feeling separation from him. So he's absorbed in this these pastimes. So Akrura, he asks Krishna to please come to his home. The basic premise is that we want Krishna to come to our house. We want Krishna to live in our home. How does Krishna live in our home? As the deity. We have deities within our home. So having the deity in your home is having the Lord in your home. Or we may have pictures of the deities. That is also non-different. The Lord should be the center of the house. So Akrura, he wants Krishna to come and to stay in the house with him. That's Vedic culture. Vedic culture means that you want to accept exalted persons into your home. It's a little bit different in ISKCON. Sometimes Indian people, the culture is they want the saintly people to come to their house, and then they feel like the sins in the house have been destroyed. So it's kind of like it's a fruitive mentality or a fruitive reason or desire that people have to invite. Just like something they invite you to come. You come there, they don't follow, they don't really listen to what you say, they don't really follow the instructions. You leave, they go back to doing exactly the same things. For ISKCON devotees, it's different. When a saintly person comes to our house, it's so that we can be purified by their association. Not they just come and then when they leave, everything remains the same. No. We should become elevated by their association. So Akrura, he is asking Krishna to come to his home. He wants Krishna's association. And he wants to serve Krishna by making him comfortable in his house. But Krishna says, I have something else to do first. What does he have to do? Kill Kamsa. Because what is the whole reason why Krishna left Vrindavan? Why did Krishna leave?
To establish Dharma.
Yeah, to establish Dharma. To fulfill his external reason for his appearance. Vinashaya, Chatushkritam. He leaves Vrindavan only for that reason. Otherwise, there's no reason to leave Vrindavan. But his mission needs to be fulfilled within the world, so therefore he leaves to go and destroy Kamsa and his enemies. So he says, I will come to your home, but first just let me do a few other things. So then the camp is set up, and then Krishna and his friends, they want to explore the city. They've never been to Mathura. They've never been to a place like this. They've always lived in Vrindavan, in a different setting. So they want to go and explore. So Krishna goes out just to explore Mathura. And he explores Mathura. Everything is just for Krishna's enjoyment. All of Krishna's pastimes are simply for his pleasure. He just enjoys all the time. So without fear, he just enters into the city to experience Hashiras. What is Hashiras?
Smiling.
Yeah, smiling, joking, laughing. So he's just laughing and enjoying with his friends. You see boys when they're together. They like to smile and joke, and you know, they're always having fun together. So they're just going through and they're just making jokes and smiling and funny. They say, look at this, look at that. What do you think about this? We can go here. We can do like that. So they're just enjoying themselves. So it describes that Mathura is extremely beautiful. Extremely beautiful. Exquisite architecture. Even these days, if you go to Vrindavan, so you know Kusum Sarovara, like Govardhan Hill, the beautiful lake. You know, the architecture is beautiful. If you go to Keshigat, when you're doing Vrindavan Pari, you know, beautiful architecture. You still see beautiful architecture. So Mathura is like this. It's like a beautiful architecture in every direction. That is for the pleasure of Krishna. So he's enjoying. The Mathura is a dham. It is Krishna's eternal abode. In one form, he always lives there. So it is all there for his pleasure. So it's the most beautiful, exquisite, architecturally refined city. So Krishna goes and he enjoys all through the city. Then it describes that the ladies of Mathura, they come out and they're very eager to see Krishna. Why are they eager to see him? Yeah, because they've heard about him. This is an important feature of the Srimad Bhagavatam's philosophy. We can become attracted to Krishna just by
hearing.
Many examples, right? We'll see later in the 10th canto, Rukmini, Krishna's principal wife, becomes attracted to Krishna just by
hearing.
So in the same way, we all become attracted to Krishna by hearing. That is the process. The process of the Bhagavatam is to hear about Krishna. If you hear about him, you will become attractive. And if you become attracted, you'll become attached. If you become attached, you'll develop
prema.
So this is the process. The process is hearing about Krishna. Just like this morning, we're giving Bhagavatam class. I was giving class this morning. And then I've heard it recently, actually, amongst members of the community. Right, some senior personalities. There's like different levels in our temple, right? So you got, you know, senior devotees, people who are less senior than me or been around not as long as me, but they're still senior to a degree. And then there's, you know, the new devotees. So these devotees are like intermediate, we'll say, right? They're preaching like to devotees, don't hear about Krishna's pastimes, just hear philosophy. Right, and when you become qualified, then you can hear the pastimes. But that's not actually our philosophy. Right? I was explaining that in the class this morning. I've heard it several times in the last few months. Devotees being told, don't hear the pastimes, just hear philosophy. When you're qualified, you can hear. But that Prabhupada did not say like that. And as I explained this morning, like Prabhupada gave us Krishna book in 1970. Right? Krishna book is pastime, right? With a great deal of philosophy mixed in. But it's artificial to say that we should not hear about Krishna directly. That's not our philosophy, actually. We should hear about Krishna directly. So as I said to the devotees this morning, you should read Bhagavad Gita and Krishna book at the same time. You know, you can't say, oh, once you've read Bhagavad Gita and then philosophy, whatever philosophy means, right, then you can go into hearing the pastimes of the Lord. Right? Krishna's pastimes are there in the first canto. Right? Chapter 7 to 11 in the first canto is directly about Krishna. Krishna with Ashwatthama, with Arjuna, going back into Dwarka, it's already there. So what do? We jump over that or something? It's the philosophy is somewhat artificial. No? So the basic premise is that we should hear about Krishna. Okay? Philosophy and pastime, both. They should be there. Because you only become attached to someone by hearing about them. We need to develop a personal attachment to Krishna. Yeah? So you say, okay, we can only hear philosophy. Okay, then read the Bhagavad Gita. What does Krishna say in the Bhagavad Gita? Always think of me. So Krishna says, okay, always. Now how are you going to think of him if you don't read about his pastimes? So both are there. Both must be necessary. How do you know? You weren't even there. Okay, okay.
Aya Guru Maharaj, during his first meeting with you, gave those 5 books, and out of which the 2 books were first canto of Bhagavatam and Nectar of Devotion, which are both highly elevated.
Yeah. Yeah, so we should hear about Krishna's pastimes. And actually, he wrote to me, I mean, I'd been a devotee for 2 years. Like, you know, very new devotee, 2 years. He said, you should read the books of the Goswamis. He gave me that instruction. And he said, while chanting, then you can think about the things that you are reading. Right? This is like the beginning of my devotional service. And someone say, oh, that's too elevated. Then that's not our philosophy like that. Okay, different devotees will get different instructions, but the basic point is we must hear about Krishna's pastimes. Prabhupada said, you should read Krishna book before you go to bed, and then you will dream about Krishna. Right? He gave those instructions in 1970, 71, 72. He gave us Krishna book in 1970. So when I hear, and I've heard this several times in the last few months, devotees are preaching like that. It's not correct. We should hear about Krishna's pastimes, but we should hear Krishna's pastimes under guidance. Now there has to be philosophy and there has to be pastimes together. And that the most powerful thing about the Krishna book is the Prabhupada has perfectly intertwined both. Right? It's full of philosophy and full of Leela. Right? And he explains the Leela in terms of philosophy. So we should understand both. So the ladies of, how do you say it? Mathura, they became attracted to Krishna just by hearing about Krishna. That's the process. Right? That's our whole process. By hearing about Krishna, you become attracted to him. Mm-hmm. So, so it describes that Krishna is so attractive, he is like a walking festival. And he completely captivates the mind. So he walked through Mathura and everyone was running from every direction. Oh, the son of Vasudeva has returned. The son of Nanda Maharaj has entered. So everyone was fully attracted to Krishna and overwhelmed by him. So then Krishna begins to meet certain personalities in Mathura. Who is the first person that he meets? The washerman. What is his name? Actually, it doesn't mention his name. I was just testing. It doesn't say what his name was. But. So the washerman. Now, what was the defect of the washerman?
He didn't recognize the Lord.
Yeah, he was proud. Where does pride come from? Ignorance, yeah. Well, where does it come from?
Position.
Position, yeah. Where else does it come from?
Wealth, opulence,
beauty. Yeah, all those things. It comes from association. Jana Sangash Chalo Yamcha. Rupa Goswami says, Jana Sangha. It comes from associating with materialistic people. You associate with materialists, you'll also become materialistic. Materialists are proud. Right? I drive this car. Right? And then, oh, you drive that car? And then I also drive that car. Like that. And then everyone becomes proud and materially affected by the association they keep. That's why for devotees, we have to be careful about our association. Because if you associate with the materialist, you also become materialistic in consciousness. So if you associate with devotees, you become devotional in consciousness. Yeah. So you see Maharaj is there, right? He's giving class now, right? Maharaj is giving class.
Yes.
In the temple, yeah. So I wish we could be there. It's only because our schedule's so tight. Otherwise, I would have cancelled this class if we had time and all the rest. But because what Maharaj is speaking tonight is very important. But it's, you know, unfortunately, we have to be practical with the course. But by associating with people like Maharaj, who are renunciants, they are renounced from the material energy. They're not materialistic in consciousness. I saw him upstairs today. I said, Maharaj, how old are you now? He said, 74. And he said, he was like a little boy, like a, you know, a boy. Yeah, that's what his consciousness is like. He's just joking and laughing and all like that. And I said, they're pushing you too hard. And he said, sometimes you have to push. Yeah, like this, you know, he's going to flying to Tasmania, then coming back and doing some ceremony, then initiating in the morning, then driving to the farm for Gaur Puja. And, you know, he's got this quite rigorous schedule, you know, 74. But he's just like a little boy. He says, oh, sometimes we have to push. And he's just often preaching, right? So he is not a materialistic person. He is a spiritual person. So by his association, sadhu sangha, then what takes place? You lose your material attachments. Because you see, he's renounced. He's not getting his happiness from the material energy. He doesn't have a Mercedes Benz or a BMW or a Honda or a whatever. He doesn't have it. Right? Because he's detached from those things. And then by his association, you'll also become detached. So it's by our the association we keep. So who was the washerman associating with?
Kamsa.
Kamsa. And what is Kamsa absorbed in?
Power, pride, material.
How he looks. Right? What was the washerman doing? Bringing Kamsa his clothes. And Kamsa just wants to dress nicely for what reason? For himself. Right? But the devotee is not like that. A devotee thinks Krishna must be dressed nicely. How I'm dressed is not so important. Right? But Krishna must be dressed nicely. So that is the consciousness of the devotee. Kamsa is just so. Kamsa is proud, he's self-absorbed, and by associating with him, the washerman also became proud. I am the king's washerman. I wash the king's clothes. Right? So Krishna and Balaram walked along. They said, hey, washerman, hey, come here. Give me some of these clothes. Krishna and Balaram just walk in. Hey, give me those clothes over there. Hey, come here. Give me this. I want this and this. Right? And he became very proud. Don't you know who these clothes are? They're for the king. I am the king's washerman. No, Krishna did not like the attitude. So the point is that they did not offer everything for Krishna's pleasure. So we see a direct contrast as Krishna walks into Mathura, right? Correct consciousness and incorrect consciousness. So if we don't surrender to Krishna, what takes place?
We are gone.
We are gone. I'm listening.
I heard that washerman in a past life was the person who was unhappy with Rama still being married to Sita.
Yeah, same person. He came back. Yeah.
The association, like with not only materialistic people, sometimes like within the devotee congregation also, like we should see the mentality and associate. Sometimes like we are also upcoming devotees.
Yeah.
We get.
What is your point?
Like the pride comes from the association of materialistic person, people.
Yeah. And then what?
We have to be careful with our association. Like in devotee congregation also, like we should choose our association carefully. Who
we should associate with in the congregation?
Which gives you more, who helps you in elevating your bhakti?
Yeah, of course. I was making that point, was I saying that this morning or last night? Huh? That when Jiva Goswami comments on there's five powerful elements of devotional service, and Rupa Goswami gives the list of 64 at the end, he repeats the last five and he says these are the most powerful. And Sadhu Sangha, was I saying last night or this morning?
This morning.
That last night, maybe I said both. Right. So Jiva Goswami says it is by the association that you keep, means advanced association. Specifically, when he says it again the last time, and they repeat Sadhu Sangha, he specifically said it means advanced association. Because if you associate with advanced devotees, you'll become advanced. So yeah, we have to... means you be respectful to all the devotees, but yeah, you have to look for advanced association, find advanced association. Associate with them.
I think you also have to associate with devotees that you have the knowledge and ability and a position correctly to help as well, pull up. Some people you can't help because they don't listen or they don't want to know, but then other people you might have that influence. I think it's just as important as well to pass on that love and pull someone up where it's applicable to the situation.
I try to do that.
Because you learn a lot when you teach someone too.
Yeah. It's important. So we see a contrast, right? So what was the reaction that the washerman got?
Very angry.
Right? Yeah, Krishna went with his hands, just touched him like that, and his head fell off. Imagine if you could do that on the train station. Head would just fall off. So that's what Krishna and Balaram did, because Krishna did not appreciate the attitude. Krishna said, you give me some clothes. Right? Krishna's not asking for very much. Right? But when Krishna asks for something, we must get that. Right? But the washerman would not give it. Krishna didn't appreciate that attitude. He doesn't like it. He doesn't like when the devotees hold back. Krishna doesn't like that. You hold back, then... So... who is the next person that is met?
The guard, the weaver.
Yeah, the weaver. The weaver's next. The weaver. It's only a couple of verses. But the weaver, he gives ornaments. Because what happens? They kill the washerman. All the clothes fall on the ground. All the washerman's assistants run away. All the boys run over. Right? And they start picking everything up. Right? And they hand all the best things. Krishna, Balaram, you take this, you take this, you take this. Dress Krishna and Balaram nicely. Then they dress themselves. Right? And then the weaver comes along and he says, oh, you need some ornaments to go with that. So he begins to give some ornaments. Krishna is very happy. Right? And then next? The gala maker. What's his name?
He went to his house.
Yeah, went to his house. Yeah, Krishna knew where he was and he went to his house. His name was Sudama. And he made very beautiful garlands. Once again, for the king. But when he saw Krishna and Balaram, as soon as he saw that, he said, you have come. No one is more worthy than you. So he got up and then he offered beautiful garlands to Krishna and Balaram. And Krishna and Balaram blessed Sudama. What blessings did they give?
Yeah.
asked for devotional service, friendship of devotees, and compassion for other human.
Very good, yeah.
And Krishna and Balaram blessed that, but they gave him all of the material blessings as well.
Yeah. Yeah, they gave him all blessings. They're very happy with him. But interesting what he asked for. He asked for three things. Right? He asked for unshakable devotion to Krishna. Right? Then he asked for friendship with Krishna's devotees. And then he asked to be compassionate to all living entities. So actually that's a perfect prayer. That might be in your example. It's very beautiful, actually. If you meditate on that, you can become perfect just by meditating on that. That's enough. If you can just perfect that in your lifetime, you'll go back to Krishna. Just be friendly with his devotees, compassionate to all the living entities, and unshakable devotion to Krishna. All right, so then you take Lord Chaitanya's three principal instructions, right? It's basically the same thing. Vaishnava Seva, Nama Ruchi, Jiva Daya. Okay, so analyze it. Jiva Daya, compassion. Vaishnava Seva, friendship. Right? Nama Ruchi, unshakable faith to. Well, it's basically the same thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's basically it. So if you perfect that, that's everything. So he gave us very powerful prayers. Okay. Chapter 42. It's called? The breaking of the sacrificial bowl. Right? This wasn't an ordinary bowl. You have to understand this. So how does the chapter begin? Kubja, Trivakra. Very good. So, Trivakra, she represents the earth. Yeah, she's a like an expansion of the Bhu Shakti, which means the earth. And she's like a manifestation of the earth, a incarnation of the earth planet. So the earth was overridden by demons, asuras. So when the earth is overrun by asuras, she becomes bent in three places. Too much crazy stuff going on in the world these days. You heard the news the last 24 hours in America? Too crazy, man.
Do you remember that you told us in a class that the eclipse was going over America, and ever since you told, and ever since that eclipse, there's been so many hurricanes and...
Interesting.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
And now this.
Yeah. Yeah. Too crazy. Just like crazy. So when it's like this, the earth becomes overburdened with demoniac people. And like, you know, as we're seeing, yeah, then they'll be wiped out. All the people will be wiped out if they act in impious ways. So the earth now is feeling overburdened. So Trivakra is Kubja, bend in three places. Same thing. Yeah, I mean, the kings are demoniac at the moment. The kings are demoniac at the moment.
Yeah, that's why the people are there.
Yeah. Yeah, because no one is there to pull them up.
Yeah.
The ISKCON has to do that. So, she came to Krishna and she said, no one is more beautiful than you. Therefore, the oils which I'm carrying, which are meant for the king, they should be offered to
you.
Only to you. So she takes the oils and she offers them on the body of Krishna and Balaram. Now, what's that?
Ointment.
Yeah, oils. Ointment. Okay. So she offers these things onto the body of Krishna. Under the body of Balaram. Kubja has she's not 100% pure. A little bit of lust in her consciousness. Not totally, but some lust is there. So she is attracted to Krishna. She wants to enjoy with him conjugally. So she says, please come. And she grabs his garments, said, come to my home, enjoy with me. Krishna puts his fingers underneath, lifts her up, his two fingers on each hand, lifts her up, straightens her, right? And he says, I will come and enjoy, but not now. Right? And he's a little embarrassed, you know? The girl walks up to you on the street and says, come and enjoy with me in my home. Or a boy says to a girl, come and enjoy with me in my home. So civilized people, they will not appreciate that kind of behavior. So Krishna, he makes a joke out of it. Yeah, and he looks at his cowherd boyfriends and he laughs, and then they all laugh, and then so there's no impurity within Krishna, because Krishna is on the platform of Shuddha Sattva. There's no lust. He said, I will come, but I'll come later. Let me do a few things first. So then he continues. Where do they go to next?
What I can't understand, you know, they say she was the extension of Satyabhama.
Yeah.
But Satyabhama was in Dwarka.
Yeah.
So how was she the expansion?
Like a partial expansion. The partial expansion. Okay, so then where does he go to next?
To the arena.
Yeah, the arena where the bow is. So he goes into the bow. So he just walks up. He's so powerful. He just walks in. The bow, I was reading yesterday, the bow was about 270 feet long. All right, so what's that in meters? 270 feet.
1870.
About 80 meters long. So it's like, it's probably from here to the end of Dang Street or something. 80 meters long. It's like from here back down to Boyd Street or something. A big bowl. Alright, so Krishna just walks in. He sees the bow and it's surrounded by guards, and they worship the bow actually, because the bow is originally from Lord Shiva, given to Parashuram, given to Kamsa. So they worship the bow to get military strength within the city. And Krishna just walks in, he sees the bow, there's guards all around it. He just walks through the guards and he says, what is that bow? And then as he walks towards, the guards become stunned because he's just so powerful and beautiful. He walks in and he picks up the bow. You know, the bow is like 270 feet long. He just picks it up. And he picks it up and he bounces it from hand to hand, right? And then he grabs the string and he pulls it back. And as he pulls it back, he just rips it, and the whole thing cracks. And when the bow cracks, it makes a noise which is like thunder, which goes through the whole of Mathura, and it shakes the whole of Mathura. And when Kamsa hears the sound and he knows it's the sound of the bow breaking, Kamsa's heart becomes overwhelmed with fear.
It went to the sound, went to the heaven as well.
Yeah, even to heaven it went. Yeah, so he just breaks it, shows his supreme strength. So then what takes place?
Fight.
All the guards attack him, right? And when the guards attack him, right, what do they fight them with? Yeah, the bow. The bow is in two pieces. So Balaram and Krishna pick up the bow like a big club, and they're just winding it around, just smashing, right, everyone. And then more soldiers come and they kill them. I think it says it goes for about 2 hours, I think. Something like that. They're just, you know, smashing all the soldiers. And when all the soldiers are defeated, then they just put down the bow and they just walk out. And they just keep walking around the city as if nothing even took place. They're just enjoying themselves. Oh, look at this, look at that. You know, just enjoying themselves. It shows how powerful they are. So then, after a while, Krishna goes back out of the city, back to the camp of
Nanda Maharaj.
And then what does he have to eat?
Sweet rice.
Sweet rice, very good. Yeah, has some sweet rice for dinner. And then he lays down to sleep. Does he sleep?
Yes.
He says yes and he says no. The Bhagavatam says that Krishna slept very well.
Not really.
But actually he didn't sleep at all.
He was the king of gopis. And
not the gopis. Radharani.
Radharani.
Yeah. He was thinking of Radharani.
There's a difference.
Yeah. There's more commentary. Bhagavatam says he slept very soundly. That what that means is he had no anxiety. Kamsa was not a problem. I mean, just slept soundly because Kamsa's no problem. But in his mind and heart, he didn't sleep the whole night. He was just thinking about Radharani. Because she must have been in so much suffering. And then it says Nanda Maharaj could not sleep the whole night. Because Nanda Maharaj was thinking, what did my boys do? They went in the city, they stole the clothes of the king, right? They broke a bow, they killed all the king's soldiers, right? The king's not going to be very happy, right? The king's probably going to send someone in the middle of the night to assassinate them. So Nanda Maharaj is full of anxiety. That's the difference between the devotee and Krishna. We're in anxiety and Krishna's not. So then, the next day, they get up in the morning and they all head to
the pavilion.
Yeah, the wrestling arena. So they all go. So Nanda Maharaj goes and the cowherd men go. But who doesn't go? Krishna Balaram, their friends. It's actually very disrespectful. It's like you're invited to a big function, you don't turn up. Right? The king himself has invited you, you don't go. It's very disrespectful. So Krishna is purposely disrespecting Kamsa at this point in time. What's that?
Kamsa should have called him.
Huh?
He should have arranged for reception.
Who?
For Krishna.
Who?
Kamsa.
Yeah.
But he didn't do it.
No, he didn't do it. So, what is chapter 43?
Krishna rescues.
Valayapa. What's it called?
Krishna
kills the elephant, Kuvalaya Pete. Okay. So, Krishna, the opening verse of the chapter says, Krishna is thinking, I have to kill my uncle. What happens if you kill your uncle?
You incur sin.
Yeah, you incur sin. You get pap. But Krishna thinks, no, actually, he needs to be killed because he's a demon. So if you're, even if your family members are demons, even if they're your family but they're demons, if you kill them, there's no reaction. So then, Krishna begins to walk towards the arena and he sees the elephant. As I described, you know, a few weeks back when we discussed, the elephant wasn't ordinary. It was like this elephant was as powerful as 10,000 other elephants. It was extremely powerful. So this elephant... Krishna walked towards him and Krishna said to the elephant trainer who was sitting on top of him, he said, if you don't move the elephant, I'll send both of you to the abode of death. Right, and Krishna tied his hair up, right, and then tightened his clothes, got everything ready. He was ready to fight. He was angry at this point because he was ready to get Kamsa. So, the Acharyas point out that when he was speaking about Yama, Yama means there is Yama and Niyama, means things you must accept and things you must reject. The beginning of yoga process, Yama, Niyama, Ashtanga Yoga, right? Then asana, pranayam, prachaha, like that. So, eightfold. Isn't it? So basically, Krishna is indicating you need to, because yama means things you have to do to control your mind. If you don't control your mind, you cannot attain Krishna. The mind must be controlled. So he was saying like that. That was what he was indicating. He said, I'll send you to the abode of death. Basically saying, if you don't control yourselves, your mind, surrender to me, you will go to the abode of death. So that was his indication. So, a devotee has no fear of time, death, or Yamaraj. So Kuvalaya peed, even though he was so big and powerful, Krishna was saying, I have no fear of time, death, Yamaraj. But if you do not surrender, you will be destroyed. So then they just played with the elephant. Krishna grabbed the trunk. Balaram grabbed the tail. Right? Balaram was pulling the tail. Krishna was pulling the trunk. They were having fun, enjoying themselves. Balaram was at the back, he had the tail. Krishna had the trunk. So they were just playing, it was just fun, right? And then finally Krishna kills the elephant. He snaps out the tusk and sticks it into the side, like that. And then they break off both the tusks. Krishna gets one, Balaram gets one. They walk into the wrestling arena just to insult Kamsa. Here's your elephant. You know, we've got the tusk on the shoulder. They walk into the wrestling arena. It says Krishna actually danced into the arena.
Is this the blood goes on Krishna's face?
Yeah. Yeah, splashes of blood. Yeah, he had blood on him. Look,
and
he looked
beautiful.
Yeah, he looked like a warrior. So when he enters the wrestling arena, there's thousands of people in the arena, and thousands of people, they all see him differently. So it said there are 12 rasas, 7 secondary, 5 primary. It says that 10 of the 12 rasas were manifest simultaneously. So you might want to study that little section about the different rasas which were experienced. I won't go into the details, but I'll give you a hint for your exam. You might want to look at the who had which rasa and like that. I'm a nice teacher, huh? What do you think? Yeah, I'm a bit too easy on these guys, aren't I? If they're in university, a teacher doesn't say like that. Yeah, I virtually write the exam for them. I tell them, oh, do this, do that, and then too much. Next year I'm going to be really strict. Okay.
You're too soft.
I'm too soft with all of you. I'm too soft. Yeah.
You can't become hard.
With all of you, I'm soft. Yeah. When I step out of this classroom, I'm very hard and serious.
I've never seen you
hard. You are all like my children. You're all like my children. So I'm very soft. But the other devotees, I'm very strict. If they don't come to Bhaktivedanta class, I'll be very strict on that. Hare Krishna. Okay. So, when Krishna enters the wrestling arena, it says that the senses of all the devotees in the arena, they become merged. Right? And it feels like they, just with their eyes, they see Krishna, but they feel like they want to taste him with their eyes, they want to touch him, they want to absorb themselves in the aroma of his body. So all of their senses just simultaneously, just by seeing him, they just completely want to reach out. This is a symptom of the bhava, of prema, very high devotion.
So they want to, or they do?
That's how they feel.
But can they taste, feel?
Yeah, to a degree. Mm. To a degree. So then, the wrestlers, they see Krishna and Balaram as? Yeah, it says as lightning bolts. Like bolts of lightning. Chapter 44 is called? The killing of Kamsa. So, the wrestlers were just like fireflies. When the firefly is next to the sun, it doesn't do anything. So even though they were the most powerful wrestlers, but in front of Krishna and Balaram, there was no power. So Krishna and Balaram, once again, they just played. then just enjoy the wrestling match. Then the ladies of the assembly of Mathura, they began to speak of the great fortune of the residents of Vrindavan, particularly the gopis, that they could see Krishna and Balaram every day. They'd only heard about them from this point. But if you live in Vrindavan, you can see them every day. So it is such a great fortune. So they were... the Mathura buses were exalting or glorifying the position of the bridge buses, which is the message of the 10th canto. The message of the 10th canto is that the bridge buses reign supreme, even among the Dwarka buses and the Mathura buses. So then, they were wrestling with them, but then they heard the ladies within the audience were saying, this is not fair, they will become hurt. So to relieve their anxiety, immediately they killed Chanura and Mushtika. And then, what happened after they killed Chanura and Mushtika? Kamsa was angry, right? But they began to dance very nicely. And then they did a bridge bussy dance performance. And all the cowherd boys ran in and they joined them. And they all danced together in the middle. And then the cowherd boys said, you can beat Chanura and Mushtika, but you cannot defeat us. So then they wrestled with Krishna and Balaram. And Sridharma and some of the cowherd boys defeated Krishna and Balaram in front of all the audience. Just to, Krishna and Balaram just showing, you know, we smashed these demons, but our devotees will let them beat us. We'll let them defeat us. So they were showing the highest rasas of Sakya Ras between Krishna and his friends in front of everyone. So then, then Krishna jumped up onto the dais of Kamsa. It said that he jumped up so quickly, people did not even see him move. It was like a Garuda, just like suddenly just sweeps down so quickly, just he's there. So he, like a lion, he just ran and jumped up, landed, right? And then he fought with Kamsa. It said they fought for 2 hours. Very powerful fight, and everyone was watching. After 2 hours, Krishna grabbed Kamsa and then he threw him. And Kamsa landed on the wrestling dais in the center of the arena. Krishna jumped, landed on his chest, felt like a mountain landing on his chest, and with his fist he just punched him, crashed him, and punched him to death. Just a smash, smash. And then he picked him up, grabbed him by the hair, and dragged him all around the arena just to show everyone he was dead. In the beginning, everyone was thinking Kamsa's just unconscious, but then they showed him he was dead, and everyone began to chant Jai, Jai. They were extremely happy. So then, it says that Kamsa attained liberation by being killed by Krishna. Krishna then pacified Kamsa's wives as much as he could. He then performed the funeral rites of his uncle, Kamsa. And then it says that he was approached by his mother and father, Devaki and Vasudev. But they approached him in the mood of awe and reverence. So in chapter 45 is called?
Wait, doesn't he cover them in that chapter or is it the next chapter?
Both.
Krishna rescues his teacher's son.
Yeah, Krishna rescues his teacher's son. So in the beginning of the chapter, Vasudeva and Devaki, Krishna has to cover them with yoga maya so that they will relate to him as their son. So when he does that, they come forth and then they begin to fondle him and show affection to him. Then some verses are spoken where Krishna says that we must repay our parents. We have a debt and a duty to look after our parents. And as we discussed in the class a few weeks ago when we read that section, it depends how qualified your parents are. So if your parents are extremely qualified, if they're devotees, you should look after them 100%. If they're not devotees, then you have to work out a balance. Because your main obligation is to Krishna. So you look after your parents, but not to the point where it completely overcomes your bhakti. You have to find what the balance is. If they're devotees, then just look after them fully. So then, Krishna, he approaches Nanda Maharaj, and he says, now you should go back to Vrindavan. And he says, we will come soon. Nanda Maharaj is very upset. But Krishna said, don't worry, we will come. You go ahead and tell the others we will come very soon. So, trusting Krishna, Nanda Maharaj goes back to Vrindavan. So then, Vasudev arranges for Krishna and Balaram to enter into the Gurukul. Right? So they become Gurukulis. They become brahmacharis for 2 months. And they go to Avanti, which is
near Ujjain.
Ujjain, yeah. So they go to Ujjain. And they live with Sandipani Muni, and they become brahmacharis for 2 months. Now, why do they do that? No? To set an example for us. We should follow these things. We should be brahmacharis. If you can't be brahmachari, then as a grihastha, you have to practice brahmacharya. You have to catch up on lost time. They serve the guru to show us that guru seva is one of the key elements of bhakti. Yeah. Rupa Goswami, when he gives 64 items of bhakti, it begins with service to guru, guru padashraya, taking shelter and serving. So then, they hear everything once. 64 days, they learn 64 arts. Right? Just by hearing everything once, they become perfect. Then they say to their guru, what do you want? He says, I want my son back. They go into the ocean. He kills Panchajanya. He brings Madhu Mangala back. Right? And then he gives that dakshina to his guru. When you give dakshina, when you reciprocate or serve your guru, you get blessings, and the guru blessed. Whatever you boys speak, it will always be fresh. Yeah? So you can read the Bhagavad Gita 1,000,000 times, you'll always get new meanings out of it. This is the benediction Sandipani Muni gave to Krishna. Chapter 46 is? Whatever business bring down. So, Krishna never breaks his promise. Krishna promised the Brijbasis he would come back to Vrindavan. So because he promised that, he must return. But because of circumstances, he cannot return very easily. So therefore he thinks, I will send Uddhava. If I send Uddhava, he can give a message to the Brijbasis. If they get the message, that will sustain their lives, that I will come soon, that I have not forgotten you. And because he also desires Uddhava's welfare, then by Uddhava going, Uddhava will learn what he could not learn from Brihaspati, his guru. Right? Even though he's with Brihaspati and he studied, but still the gopis will teach him what Brihaspati could not teach him. And that is how to develop prema. So he went to Vrindavan. So in Vrindavan, they love him the most. And they see Krishna as their husband. The gopis see Krishna as their husband. And he says to Uddhava, go to the gopis and pacify them. So when he first enters Vrindavan, Uddhava, he sees the joyous Vrindavan. The Vrindavan that was there when Krishna was present. The Prakat Vrindavan. But then when he gets to Nandagram, he sees the uppercut Vrindavan, when Krishna is not there, and he sees how everyone is fully distressed.
Won't that be the opposite?
What's that?
When he enters Vrindavan, he sees the talk Prakat Vrindavan at that stage, isn't it? Because the joy of Vrindavan is not there. The Prakat Vrindavan is actually the sad Vrindavan.
Yeah, no, I was explaining it by Prakat and Prakat, meaning that Krishna was present or not present. But you can take it either way. Yeah. So he's seeing the joy the Brijbasis have when Krishna is present. Yeah. Yeah, explain the how you want to explain it, but that's...
So when he gets to Nandabram, he says it is sad?
Yeah. Yep. So Nanda Maharaj, he comes to receive Uddhava very perfectly. So this is Vaishnav culture. This is Vedic culture. He's feeling very sad, but when a guest comes, you must receive the guest to the best of your ability. Sometimes we don't feel very good, but if someone comes to your home, you have to look after them as if everything is perfect. So then, Nanda Maharaj says, Krishna should come back at least one time. Just once. We just want to see him one time. This is love. They think, well, if he doesn't want to come back to Vrindavan, if he's happy in Mathura, we'll be happy. That's actual prema. This is what the Shikshastika teaches us. I was explaining this last night. It's why chapter 46 is very important. Because chapter 46 is teaching us, and chapter 47 is even more important, but we'll study that next year by Krishna's mercy. But chapter 46 teaches us that devotional service must be unmotivated, uninterrupted. The Brijbasis think, well, if he's happy in Mathura, let him stay in Mathura. But just let him come back here once, just so we see him. But if he wants to stay in Mathura, if he's happier there, then let him stay there. All right, that is love. That we put Krishna before ourselves. And Krishna wants to see all of us develop this consciousness, that we put him before ourselves. At the moment, we put ourselves before him. Nanda Maharaj said that. But Radharani has the same sentiment. Yeah. So then next Monday we'll explain what takes place. But he stays up all night with the Brijbasis, with Nanda Maharaj. In the morning, he takes bath. They don't sleep. He comes out. And then the gopis come. And the gopis say, who is this? There's a chariot here. There's a Kurura come back. They're very angry. But then Uddhava walks out and they say, oh, it's Uddhava. And they become very happy. And that leads into chapter 47, which we'll study later on, where Uddhava speaks to the gopis in private. It's a very beautiful chapter. Any points?
So it says that Uddhava's creature resembles Krishna.
Yeah. Looks, yeah, very similar. Anything else? Okay, so all of your fees are due today. Your open book exams are due today, and your oral presentation should have been finished by today. Hare Krishna. And if they're not, then make sure they're ready by next week. Otherwise, I'll be very upset. Okay, don't come next week unless you have your fees, your open book exams and your oral presentations complete. Otherwise, I don't want to see your faces.
Mataji's right, you are
too slow. I am too slow. They should have been due today, but next week at the latest. Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki.